Andy, you're in the unique position. You've been a hostage in the past, and you've also been planning to free hostages.
Yes.
Give us your perspective on how this 16-hour siege has developed.
Well, it's certainly looking at the footage, it's been a success. I think that the primary task is everybody, whether it's the armed response or the negotiators and even the government, the prime mission, everything is focused on rescuing the hostages. So clearly something has gone on during the negotiations where the decision is made is that the negotiations are going wrong, will go wrong. Maybe there was one of the casualties is a hostage who got shot and killed by the hostage taker. So therefore what happened is there's different terms for it, but it's the main term is called the emergency response. Somebody has to go in to stop that from happening because actually the hostages are being killed, and that's not the mission. The mission is to save the hostages, so then they've got to go in. And that's the last resort.
And that is the key decision, that whoever's in charge of the operation, they're going to be held accountable for
that's
that
decision
afterwards,
aren't
they? That's
a big call, because it's not a science. Once you start having a lot of ammunition flying around, just not only the people that are in the building, but also the police or the military that are conducting that operation, they're at risk as well. So it's a big call, and it's made at quite a high political level, but somebody's got to make that call. The situation is going wrong. The mission of saving the hostages isn't going to happen. So therefore, this emergency response, this armed response, has got to go in and try and cut it there and then to make sure we don't get rising casualties.
And I suppose one of the things that we notice from a lot of sieges is that they develop in a very slow way. It's very rare that someone takes a hostage and then an hour later it's all over. It usually goes on over a number of hours. Contact is presumably normally made with the hostage taker. And negotiations start, and I mean, we see all the TV dramas where this is played out. I mean, I don't know whether you watch these TV dramas and think, no, they've got this.
Yeah,
well,
the illusion of reality. But fundamentally, that's absolutely right. There needs to always be a negotiated settlement because the mission is to save the hostages. So therefore, if it can be done in a way where everybody's coming out, what happens with the hostage takers, they get arrested and all that stuff really doesn't matter at that time. There's if you're certainly looking at the Russian sort of mission statement, is to kill the terrorist or the hostage taker. So the dynamic is very different. So they'll go in and storm in straight away and with no regard to the hostages because their mission statement is wrong.
And
ours is not.
And the backup team presumably needs a little bit of time, or probably quite a lot of time, to build up a profile, a psychological profile of the hostage taker. Now, they clearly identified who this guy was relatively quickly, and we now know they had a lot of information on him because he's been either convicted or charged with all sorts of offences. So he wasn't somebody new to them.
No, absolutely. And there's two lots of main information you want. Certainly you want who the hostage taker is, because certainly the negotiators need that. Certainly if there's somebody with an ideology, at least their direction, what they're doing. Maybe if they have a mental illness, it's more difficult. But the other most important information for the planners who are going to deal with this emergency response is the physical layout and the physical composition of where these people are being held. How many of them? Is there anybody with medical conditions? Are there diabetics there? Are there people with heart conditions? Because you can go in there with the flashbangs and you can go in there with all the weapons. We don't want to kill people through some heart condition. So it's looking at how do the assaulters actually get in to free the hostages. And that was certainly my sort of job when I was part of the counterterrorism team, because within an hour, whoever was planning that emergency response has to have a plan. And it's only going to be with the information he's got. And as more information comes in, he builds that plan up. So if the emergency response has to happen, at least they've gone in with as maximum amount of information.
I mean, I can remember back in 1980 with the Iranian embassy siege, and the decision to go in, I think I'm right in saying, was taken by the Home Secretary, the final decision.
Absolutely.
Presumably on the recommendation of those on the scene.
Yes.
Now, I don't know how the Australian system works, but what do you think?
It would be very similar. It's a big political call because, once you start, committing, whether it's the police or the military, in one of these, in a civilian environment in that response, that's a big call that has to work, obviously, on the recommendation of the senior policeman on the scene. But government will make that decision, and there would have been a team there sitting ready and waiting, because this is the last thing they would want, because they would want everybody to walk out, arrest the guy, and then go through a normal sort of process. But somebody's got to make that decision, because if it goes wrong, it's not only the police's heads that roll, but it's politicians as well.
Well, they never like that.
Absolutely not.
Looking at it from the hostages' point of view, Bear in mind, in this situation, I think there were, what, 40 or 50 people in this cafe. A very dynamic situation, because there will inevitably have been a few of the people in among those 40 or 50 wanting to be heroes, maybe, wanting to sort of be the ones that actually sort of tackle the hostage taker to the ground, save the situation. And then there'll be others, assuming they can even communicate with each other, who will sort of want to caution them. And that is that the sort of typical situation?
Yes,
or again,
absolutely.
Am I looking at too many TV
dramas? No,
dramas
absolutely. And certainly the people, if you like, the have-a-goes, they, you know, they'll do that very early
that
on.
That would have been you.
That would be, if there's the opportunity, because you can get it cut you can get away with it and get it done quickly. That's normally sort of short and sharp, and maybe you wouldn't be in this situation now. The problem is after a while, you know, certainly we have this thing called Stockholm Syndrome, where people sort of have empathy to the hostage taker. This, you know, in this situation, it definitely isn't there because it's too short. But what happens as the police enter to try and save them, what will happen, a lot of time, people will come and grab you because your safety. Yeah. And actually, it stops you doing your job. So in some cases, you have to be quite violent to them to get them to the floor so you can carry on and do your job and take out whatever the threat is.
Andy, clearly, again, this is one of these so-called lone wolf incidents. And I suppose we saw that when he was when we knew that he'd gone in with a shotgun. That's not exactly the normal thing that you'd expect a hostage taker to maybe take into one of these situations, is it?
No, not at all. And then it's all part of that information gathering as well. So you're saying, well, you know, are we looking at a hardened terrorist with an ideology? And there's certain avenues that he's going to take, which is in some ways is helpful. If you've got somebody coming in with a, you know, in effect a domestic weapon, a shotgun, you don't know what the problem is. You know, whether he's drunk, he's mentally ill, or there's a grievance. You know, one of these grievance shootings, and that becomes always very, very difficult, because certainly for the first of all, the negotiators to actually make contact and then start a dialogue to understand what the grievance is. You're never going to stop it. And the same as, you know, even terrorist attacks with ideology, you're not going to stop it. It's, you know, the whole point of having a security sort of apparatus is just to try and keep a lid, if you like, on a boiling pot. And then sometimes there's going to be steam that's going to escape now and again, but the sole job is to try and keep that top on. So if somebody's, you know, got a domestic weapon and they go into a public building, it's very, very unlikely, you know, you're going to stop these sort of things. And that's why these organisations, you know, where the police force have got, you know, negotiation teams, siege busting teams, you know, in this case the Australian police, who are trained negotiators, trained siege takers. So once these situations in, we've seen the machine that they've got was very, very effective, very effective. This is a success, no matter what the debriefs are going to be on. It's a success, because there's something that you can't control. So what you've got to do is react to it, and they've done that really well.
We're going to be talking about the effect of police cuts in a moment on all sorts of different types of policing, but in effect, you can't ever say that the police or the security services are ever going to be able to stop every single lone wolf event. In fact, because if they're lone wolf events, it's unlikely that if they carry them through, it's too late. You've got to stop them maybe sort of weeks before they happen.
Absolutely, and this is why that whole sort of security apparatus is trying to stop these things before they happen. But unfortunately, you know, some will get through the net. Just purely, you know, we're a liberal democracy. You know, we can go around and virtually do what we want. So the security services has got to operate within those, if you like, limits of exploitation. Mm. Otherwise, become, you know, sort of communist East Germany or whatever.
Let's look at it from the hostages' point of view. You yourself are a hostage. Once a very different kind of situation from this. But psychologically, I suppose, that there is something in common that all people who've been in a hostage situation will have in common between them, won't they?
Yeah. It's the fear of the unknown. So, you know, everybody's, you know, the people, they've got no control of what's going on. They're very fearful of going on. They've grown up on TV and film watching these situations. They immediately think of the worst sort of scenarios. And actually, they'll start then thinking about their families, trying to make contact. In fact, I think somebody did manage to get a text to their mother at some stage in the early times, which certainly from the security forces' point of view, that's a good thing, because it shows there's no control. The guy is not too sure what he's doing and why he's doing it. Everybody's thoughts then go into their cells, really, and just thinking about their families and that fear of the unknown, because they have no idea, because it's so alien of what's going on. I should imagine when, you know, the hostage taker started to draw his weapon and you know, this thing started to evolve around them, there was maybe, you know, 5-10 seconds of disbelief, because it's out of the norm normal existence, and it's, you know, it only exists in films. And it takes a while for people to realise exactly what is happening. And maybe the ones that managed to get away initially, they're the ones who realised what was happening a lot quicker and thought, right, time to go, time to go.
And the police didn't want the name of the individual to be released initially. Why would that be?
Because it's the release of information. Because there's, first of all, you don't know whether this is something that there's going to be some coordination. You have no idea whatever groups that might be involved in this. So there may be another one in London. There may be another one in Melbourne. There may be. So it's the control of information. And at the same time, they want to find out about this guy. So if he's connected with a group, if he's connected with, you know, certain individuals, they want to get to those individuals before anybody else does, or these individuals then get out of, you know, existence, because it's all about gathering the information to get to a point where they can get him to walk out with the hostages safe, or if he's starting to, you know, becoming too much of a risk at that government level, they say, right, we've got to go in, we've got to go in. And even if there was more hostages, you know, killed, thankfully there wasn't, but even if there was, there would be the criticism of that. But it's not a science. You've got to remember that there's somebody keeping people against their will with weapons, and that's got to be stopped.
I mean, this is maybe not a question for you, but I do think this is an interesting point that Steve from the USA, he says, I was listening to Australian news on this, and the hostage taker was out on bail for various serious crimes, including sexual offences, and even as an accessory to murder, yet he was out on bail and had a gun. That's, I suspect, where the Australian media are going to
concentrate
their fire.
And all countries got that problem. You know, we have that problem with, you know, the sort of Lithuanian guy who murdered a couple of months ago, and America has exactly the same problems. And again, liberal democracies, we want to live in those environments. So therefore, part of the downside of that is then people do have their liberties. So therefore, it's trying to get a security apparatus that works within those confines for everybody. But there will be people who get through that net, without a doubt.